Hello, welcome to the Film Stage Podcast. I'm Jordan Raup.
And I am Dan Mecca.
And we are back after quite a hiatus.
yes.
Our last one was Inception. So
it was a small little character study that came out in July. So, I mean, if you have forgotten about it, that's understandable.
Yes, and no memorable films have come out since then. So.
So
that's how we stop.
Jokes aside, that's actually not really a joke.
No,
that's
well, I mean,
that's almost not a joke, but we have some memorable ones today, at least one.
We're going to review 127 Hours, Unstoppable, Morning Glory, and then Skyline. But before that, we were going to talk about these last few months of our cinema watching.
Yeah, there have been a lot of film festivals and stuff, and you know we haven't been on the online air, so I figured we'd do a quick little recap. You want to start us off
in
Toronto?
Yes, in September, I went to the Toronto Film Festival for 10 days, and actually one of my favorite films we will be talking about soon. But other than that, Darren Aronofsky's Black Swan was the highlight. Just kind of a lot of people have said it. The first half is kind of like The Wrestler, and then the second half is The Fountain. And it's just kind of this movie that slowly unfolds until it just completely envelops you by the end. And one of his best films. I think each piece of his earlier films are kind of in it.
I mean, I'm excited. I think we both get to see it in about a week now. Yeah. And that would be... It'll be your second time seeing it, and it'll be my first, so I'm really super excited to see that.
Yes,
definitely my
Natalie Portman is fantastic in it, as is Vincent Cassell and Mila Kunis as well, and Clint Mansell's score is great. I mean, if you love Aronofsky, you will highly enjoy it, but we'll have a full podcast on that. So, some lesser-known films, Submarine, from a guy that was on the IT crowd, or the IT crowd. It's his directorial debut, Richard Iotti. And it's a really, really funny coming-of-age story. And, and it's coming out, I think, next spring. I mean, you can check out my full review, but it's just, like, some people compare it to Napoleon Dynamite, but it's not as kind of dry as that, I would say.
Did you like Napoleon Dynamite?
I did.
Did you?
I didn't, like... I don't think it's fantastic, but I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, okay, yeah. People are so split on that. I really hated like Napoleon Dynamite. So I mean, an example. Yeah. So yeah. I wonder how I feel about Submarine.
It's very fast paced. Like it's not like, it's not like Napoleon Dynamite where the jokes are kind of stretched out a little and like kind of quirky and. Right. This is very much. A lot of people compare it to Wes Anderson, but it's a lot more personal than Wes Anderson. I feel like a lot of Wes Anderson, at least his recent films, are just very stylish and flashy.
Yeah.
And I really just love the characters in this one. Sally Hawkins has a great supporting performance, so check that out definitely. And then one we both saw, we'll get in New York Film Festival, but Meek's Cut Off.
Right.
Kelly Reichardt's third film.
Fourth actually.
Fourth.
Yeah, fourth film. And
I'm talking about that.
Fourth film and fourth feature. I mean, that was one of the better films that I saw at the New York Film Festival, which I went to for about 2-3 weeks. We'll probably talk about more later on this year or next year.
It's coming out in April.
Yeah. But a really ambitious try for her in the vein of her other films, but obviously with a wider canvas and, it takes place in the 1850s and they're... literally traversing the Oregon Trail, so to speak, except it's not the Oregon Trail. It's the trail devised by this guy named Stephen Meek, who's played by Bruce Greenwood. Who's
almost recognizable, though.
Yeah, almost unrecognizable, and he's amazing in it. And, there's a couple wrong notes or whatever, in terms of acting performances. Some people don't really kind of live up to or meet up to the standards of the rest of the cast, but a visually amazing and definitely worth checking out whenever it comes out. For me, from the New York Film Festival, probably the two best films I saw were Carlos, the Olivia Sayas film. We actually saw at New York, we were able to see the 5.5-hour cut kind of in one sitting with one bathroom break. And that was just an exhausting just journey of life and just a lot of other things. But it's well worth it, though. I mean, it's an experience and a half. And, if you like Che, this is Che with the political inserted in. Che was kind of notoriously a examination of the man, not the myth, and kind of avoided his political leanings, I think, and, was more of a technical kind of observing him very, very factually as possible. This is obviously more, has more of a bent to it. Edgar Ramirez is amazing in it as Carlos the Jackal, and there's some amazing supporting performances, and it's just a very international movie, you know, like a lot of Seuss's movies, it's very international, a lot of different countries, a lot of different languages. It'll keep you on your toes just because of that. And then the other film, which was just really, really great, and continues to show what good films are coming out of Romania, is a film called Tuesday After Christmas. And that film, I don't think, I confuse it with, what is it, The Death of Mr. Lorette? I thought that those people made Tuesday After Christmas, but I'm pretty sure that that's not true. Either way, Tuesday After Christmas is pretty much a story about a guy who's cheating on his wife, and just how it affects his mistress and his wife. And it's very subdued and very, you know, underwritten, and shots are, it's pretty much all master shots, and it's almost like, in a lot of ways, it's somewhat like Manhattan, Woody Allen's Manhattan, without, obviously without as much neurotic comedy, but, in the way it's shot, it recalls something like Manhattan, and, just surprisingly effective movie, and, I really hope it can find a place in the American theaters. Maybe it's an IFC movie, maybe an on-demand Magnolia movie.
Hasn't picked up yet.
Yeah, I don't know, but either way, I mean, if you can seek it out, it is well worth your time. So those were the two for me. It was a great festival. I thought I saw Social Network there for the first time.
I was going to say, that counts. I think that's been talked enough.
Yeah, I don't want to mention that. But I saw that one too there, and yeah, I mean. And then what was the other one? Oh, The Tempest. I didn't see, but one of our writers saw.
Yeah, she actually liked it.
And she liked it, which is funny because most people apparently hate it.
Yeah.
Literally hate it. Like, yeah. There's no, no in between, apparently. It's just a horrible movie. But our writer, Kristen Coates, she enjoyed it. So we'll see. When does that come out?
December.
It comes out in December, yeah.
17th, I think.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, let's jump into our full reviews.
Let's do it.
All right. So Danny Boyle, after pretty much sweeping the Oscars, aside from acting categories, in 2008, he's back with 127 Hours.
Mm-hmm.
And this tells the story of the 2003 incident with Aaron Ralston, who is a mountain climber / adventurist, hiker,
right,
bicycle.
What do they call him? They had a name for what he did at the end. It's like a... there was a specific word for what he did. I can't remember, but it was creative. But yeah, Aaron Ralston... In Utah, I believe.
Yes.
Was in the mountains and the trailways, or whatever you want to call it. And it's not funny, sorry. Yeah, and he was climbing the boulder. He fell, and it landed on his arm.
Yes.
And he had to cut his arm off. I'm just thinking because in the movie has a nice dark comedy to it. And when he grabs the boulder, and the boulder falls, and he falls into the crevice, and the boulder lands on his arm... James Franco's reaction is perfect. That's one of my favorite parts.
I also
parts.
Love the way they do that with the title. That's when the title comes up, 127 Hours. Mm-hmm. I love the
exactly.
way. It's like 20 minutes into the movie.
Exactly. I just love the way that James Franco, like, because, you know, the boulder lands on his arm, and he's, like, just standing there, and he doesn't, like, scream in pain or anything. He just, like, literally cannot believe it just happened. I feel like that must have been what actually happened.
Yeah.
And
to compare it, before we get into it, we saw Buried, like, a few months ago.
Yes, yes.
And a lot of people had comparisons for this. But, obviously, I like this film a lot better.
Yeah.
And,
there are a thousand reasons. Why 127 Hours is better than Buried. But
that's true.
I don't know. I mean, why? Why is it? Why is it better than Buried? For you,
Buried, at the end of Buried, I don't want to spoil it, but it's kind of a depressing, like I said,
that's just another way to go, I guess.
With movies like Buried, I feel like they're, you know, Lionsgate picked it up, and I feel like it's more of a Lionsgate type movie with like the, it's more sadistic.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like a B movie for sure. I mean, it's not even really even playing on the same level.
Right.
But, I mean, just when you're talking about those confined space.
I mean, the reason I loved 127 Hours and why it wasn't, when this project first got announced, I was like, I'm like most people, I mean, how is he going to do this? Why is he doing this project? And then once you see it, you totally get it. Like, it's this, instead of being kind of like a sadistic, like, Saw movie, which under any other director, I feel like it could have been kind of like that. Like, yeah. This is, it becomes just like life affirming.
Well, that's, I think, exactly what it is. I mean, it's life affirming. Like, and I think that's why, I mean, this is a movie, oddly enough, that when I watched it, I thought, you know, this is why movies, you know, I mean, we live in, I mean, we've talked about this 1,000 times, and we'll probably talk about it more when we talk about Morning Glory. But, I mean, we live in a very cynical time for movies, of course, where, like, you know, if you make, you know, I'm a staunch defender of Australia, for example, and, you know, people hate that movie for 1,000 different reasons and what have you, and just dismiss it for 1,000 more reasons. And I understand it, but, I mean, you know, I like Australia because it reminds me of Gone with the Wind, and it reminds me of those, you know, the old Hollywood movies that don't get made anymore. And, you know, those old movies, when you watch them, movies like, you know, John Wayne movies, you know, John Ford movies, movies like this, High Noon, you know, it's about life-affirming things, life-affirming conflicts, where you have a character who's faced with death, and he has to confront that death, and confront the fact that he might die, and in confronting that fact, he has to come to terms with everything else in his life, you know what I mean? And that's really the movie. I mean, you know, the Western genre literally is that exact thing. So, and nowadays, instead of that, it seems to be a lot of subverted versions of that, where you have, like, you know, Journeys into the Night, and it's not necessarily death they're dealing with, but addiction and, like, love and all these different things. And, I mean, it's all the same thing, really, but that basic, very, very basic, like, you will die, how do you feel about this, how are you going to handle this, is not touched on as much as it used to be. And whereas Buried, as you say, goes for shock value, I guess, really.
Yeah.
And you don't really care about Ryan Reynolds' character. It's kind of underwritten, and the dialogue's kind of staunchy.
I mean,
and
the scripts are,
you know, the voice acting is atrocious. Yeah. Just, like, unbelievable. Like, thank God Stephen Tobolowsky got, like, 3 days on that movie to, like, literally raise it up for 2 seconds. But anyway, like, you know, 127 hours is, like, those old movies, you know, it's a man in an ordinary man in an extraordinary situation, how he comes to terms with it. And
yeah, and even, I mean, from the first frame, I mean, you can tell it's Danny Boyle. He uses, you know, there's, right, a triptych, yeah. And, like, I just love the way he uses it, and then he kind of brings it back in the end. And, I mean, what did you think of the supporting cast, the minor supporting cast?
There's not much to, I mean, think. I mean, they do their jobs.
I saw a movie line today. They posted run times of all, like, how long each cat, and I mean, this movie is James Franco pretty much, and, like, the rest very, very small, very small cast. But I mean, did you, like, I don't know,
well, I told you the one person, you know, and what I mean, spoilers for this movie are kind, it's kind of, I mean, you know, if anyone read a newspaper in the last 7 years, or, I mean,
but,
or,
well, I'm or, referring to, like, Danny Boyle does something that is more than just,
yeah, but was that ever, see, like, I don't know, like,
I guess
I don't know that anybody in my movie theater took it seriously.
Right.
You know, I mean, I can't talk about it for too long without being too, you know, phantomy about it. But I mean, in terms of supporting actors, this isn't anybody's fault, or this isn't this actress's fault, but the actress who plays James Franco's, I guess, ex-flame, is used a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit too much without really knowing enough about her. She's probably on screen the most other than him, I would say. And she's there, and you can tell, like, oh, they had a thing and it didn't go well and he was being selfish. But I just wish, I don't know, I wish there was a little bit more, because that was the one thing they, like, really towards the end refer back to her a lot, and you're kind of like, I don't really know where she fits. And maybe a little bit more Lizzie Kaplan. I don't know. Like, you know, I mean, I guess it wouldn't have really mattered. But, you know, Kate Mara and Amber Tamblyn, they're fine.
Yeah, I like their scene.
You know, I mean, scene, you know, they're a little, you know, I wonder if that, all that dialogue that they have with James Franco and in between themselves, I wonder if that was written by Simon Beaufoy and Danny Boyle.
But I wonder, I mean, these tapes exist, so I wonder if,
oh, when he's in the crevice.
The real tapes.
Oh, or them, of Kate Mara.
I mean, I know. I just know the real tapes that he took. I don't know if he met these characters, but I just know, like, they...
That would be great on the
DVD.
DVD.
But I don't think... I mean, I can't think they would ever actually show it, you know?
Why not?
I don't know. Because, I mean, he didn't... He was very private. Like, he's very... Like, only Simon Beaufoy saw him and Danny Boyle. And
oh,
him.
Really?
Yeah. Like, his family. I don't think he even showed...
Can we just take a minute and say that the title of this guy's book is the best title of any book ever about a real life event? You know, the title is between a rock and a hard place. Oh my god! When I read a review. I don't know how I did not know what the title was, but like a month before I saw it, I read a review and I saw that, and I was like urinating in my pants. That's the funniest thing. Yeah. But anyway,
I mean, do you want to get into spoilers? I feel like
about 100%. I guess if you don't want to know specific plot things, turn off, fast forward five minutes. But the part that we're referring to is when Danny Boyle does a thing that makes you believe that James Franco, because of the rain that's pouring down, is able to escape, and he runs away. And it's this moment, you know, where he gets out, you know, a la The Descent.
Yeah, exactly.
But my thing is, it's 55 minutes into the movie. So, I mean, in my mind, I knew, just because, you know, I'm watching this movie and I'm like, oh, like, there's no way this is the end. First of all, because, you know, that's not what happened in real life, but also because it's only an hour in.
Yeah.
So in my mind, it didn't even occur to me that it was real, just because there was a bunch of dream sequences and stuff.
But I mean, I think James Franco is so convincing, and like, gets even further and further into kind of hallucinating, that like you kind of buy it, and then after you realize it's fake, you buy it, his reaction to what just happened.
Yeah,
like it's not, I mean, in Barry, there's something that happens in Barry that's kind of like that, and
is there,
well, they lift up the
oh well,
and
yeah,
like it's just kind
yeah,
of like the, yeah, it's yeah. like kind of a silly, just like stupid thing, because it happens so close to something else that happens in the
Buried, and I said this to you, my final word on Buried is, because I read that script a long time before I saw the movie, and I guess it's not much different, but it read so much better than it played, and I just think that it would have made, and I guess did make, but I mean it would have made, had it been published independently, it would have made a much better short story than a film, actually. I just think it probably should have stayed on the page, but
it was kind of impressive though. What Rodriguez,
I mean,
stylistically,
sure. I mean,
but that's about it. But yeah, no, but I mean, and then I love the last 10 minutes. A lot of people think it dragged, like,
of what,
of 127 hours.
Oh no, I like it a lot. Yeah,
yeah. I was listening to another podcast that Cinema Blend, but they, and it was one guy that absolutely hated this movie. And
then, 127 hours.
Yeah, he hated it, and he just thought it was very like hokey, and like he hated that.
Well,
especially.
I can understand, because I mean it's not like, I mean, you're not in the crevice, whatever, the little hole that James Franco was in the entire movie. I mean, the camera's always jumping around, and like, you know, you see there's flashbacks and all this stuff, and all, you know, a thousand different things, and you know, but I mean, I don't know. That's what Danny Boyle does. I don't know. Like I didn't find myself.
Yeah, he found this guy that, I think it's David Elric from Cinematical, but he found a very unrealistic of how that would have happened at the end of the film, which I didn't like his whole rescue, like,
really,
yeah, meeting the families, and then like having it very dragged on. It felt like.
Yeah, I mean,
I mean, it's such a catharsis, like, after that.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, I mean, I personally think the fact that, and this has definitely been referenced as well online, but the fact that Danny Boyle kind of makes you not think about the fact that Aaron Ross is just a total idiot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the fact that you end up, I mean, obviously you're going to care for anybody in that situation, you know, no matter who they be, even though, once again, Barry would test you that on that limit, but you know, this guy was just an idiot about it. You know, he was pretty, you know, whatever, he worked at a extreme shop or what have you, but an amateur by definition, and someone who, you know, used stuff that any of us could use. Like, this guy wasn't climbing Everest, you know, this wasn't O'Donnell pushing the vertical limit. This was just, you know, this was some dude just doing his thing, and he didn't even know, he didn't call anybody, he didn't even reach far enough for his freaking Swiss Army knife in the beginning. You know, there's like you know, so I think it's impressive that, that Danny Boyle got away with that. It was able to make people forget about that part of it. You know,
absolutely, sure. Yeah. And, I mean, the scene everyone's talking about, the actual cutting of the arm.
Wait, he cuts his arm off in the movie?
Yeah, spoilers.
Oh, my God. I dozed.
You fainted?
Let me tell you that I dozed for about 5 minutes, and then I woke up, and I didn't know why people around me were weeping, and I was confused. Yeah. I didn't know. Okay, that explains a lot. Yeah. He cut his arm off.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Good.
I mean, I didn't think. I mean, it was graphic, but I didn't think.
I thought the sound design was the most graphic part. Yeah. Using the dental sounds.
Yes. All gone.
Damn.
Yes.
Well, it's the first time I heard that, like, you know, that incision. I mean, memories of, you know, root canals and Marathon Man just danced through my head, and I danced. Have you seen Marathon Man?
No.
Okay, well, Marathon Man, anyone who's seen it will know that there's this whole torture scene involving, you know, the bad guy, the Nazi bad guy played by Laurence Olivier, is a dentist, and he does horrible things to Dustin Hoffman. And so I was immediately reminded of that horrible thing, plus horrible things in real life with dentists, as I'm sure everybody else in the audience was.
Yeah.
And, oh, God, that was... Yeah, I mean, you know, but I guess no more graphic. We were talking about no more graphic than when, you know, Cillian Murphy pulls out Pennebaker's arm in Sunshine, yeah. Mark Strong's arm.
Yeah.
It comes off. You know, that was really graphic. Or anything in 28 Days Later, I guess. But I guess the fact that it's so isolated and you see pretty much all of it. And, oof. Yeah.
And just, the whole movie's been building
and it really
towards
happened
it.
Too.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
that's another thing. It's like some guy actually really did that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Saw or whatever.
Yeah, so. It's not like Saw. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, but I mean, I would heartily recommend.
I mean, what'd you think? This was shot by. Well, no, I mean, just in terms of style stuff, yes. This was shot by two different DPs.
I'm actually curious because I really wonder. I'm interested to see some special effects, like if they. You know, which ones did which, or if they just both worked together. Because, I mean, you could tell.
I thought it was meant that, like, you know, the stuff that was done outside of the hole was one guy.
Mm-hmm. Outside of the hole, yeah.
Outside of the crevice, and then in the crevice was the other one.
I saw In Contention had, like, an exclusive featurette, and it kind of looked like they were working together.
Really?
Like, so okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe they just, and it could be this case, because there's so many different angles. Like, I don't know if he even uses the same angle twice, which is kind of insane.
Right.
Like, so I feel like that could also be a reason why they both just were both working together the whole time, because, like, there's so many different.
I mean,
like,
it's funny because it cuts probably as much as, you know, it probably has as many cuts in it as a Tony Scott film,
yeah.
Which, you know, we'll be reviewing a Tony Scott film in a minute, but but not with the. Not with the same, what's the word? Not with the same kind of, almost like, not heartless, but there's a reason for every.
Yeah. Well, with 127 cut, hours, every splice, we'll talk about this in Unstoppable. But like every time it cut, I was like, oh wow, like that's a new thing.
Right. Exactly.
And with Unstoppable, you're kind of like, oh. Okay.
Well, I mean, like you're taught in film school, yeah. And I mean, it is a true. It's definitely something that should be learned is, you know, every cut should matter. You know, there should be a reason for every single cut that you make in a film. And I mean, you know, with the Tony Scott, who's a very visual guy, I don't know that you can say that for all of his cuts. I mean, you can't say that for all of his cuts, you know, as far as we're concerned. But yeah, with 127 hours, do you have the same amount, but each one is in its own ways, eye opening, another angle. Like, for example, when he's in the crevice and he's talking to himself at the camera, and he plays like two different roles of like talk show host and himself.
Yes.
And it cuts from, you know, a more high definition version of the talk show host. And then it cuts literally, I guess, maybe 45, 50 degrees to the right to the camera's version, which is dirty,
yeah.
And gritty and darker, obviously. And that's him. So it cuts back and forth. I mean, that's one of the best scenes of the movie, the funniest scene in the movie. And
I mean, there's so many little visual things that Boyle does. It's like we talked the water bottle,
right? Water bottle
going inside there, like
his bone.
Yes. Going inside the camera,
right.
Even like there's some like dollying shots, like moving, like coming up to him, like behind him and around him, like mm-hmm. They're really crazy. And he said, actually, in an interview, Boyle said. They never made a fake wall. Like, they never got – everything you see is where the camera – they only wanted to go where the camera could actually fit. So he said there's a lot of pissed off crew people. Like, because, you know, in other movies, if – you know, in Buried, I'm sure it was a huge stage and they just – they didn't film inside of a hole, basically, is what I'm saying. I guess that's impossible. Like, they didn't use any fake – they didn't cut away – like, you know what I'm saying?
So were the crews pissed because it couldn't be on set?
Yeah, it was really hard for them to do their work. But Dan Boyle said, we got to do it like this. The audience secretly knows, you know, they'll know, like, if you fake it. And in Buried, that's true. Like, there's parts they fake, and you're like, oh, okay. Like when they pull way far up, and you can
Yeah, I
tell.
don't know why they did that.
Yeah.
That was
Or like
so
pull
weird and
really far
Buried.
back, and you just see black hole. Like, you can be like, oh, you're like, oh, that's a virtual camera. They faked it.
Yeah.
But I mean, this movie, like, I don't know. There's
I
it
was
doesn't
actually I
take.
was actually it was funny that you say that, because I was wondering about that when I was watching the movie, you know, how much they manipulated the space.
Yeah, they said that's a good way to say it. They did not manipulate the space.
Yeah.
There you go.
No, yeah, that's good to know. Like, that's impressive. That's
Yeah.
definitely impressive.
So yeah, I mean, this is a movie where
Anyway, well,
I
I guess let's finish on this. Sorry, I mean,
let's
let's just
finish.
finish on James Franco's performance. People have been saying a lot of things. Is it all it's cracked up to be? Does it deserve an Oscar? You've seen more
Oh,
films
I
that'll
completely
be
forgot one. Tiff from the King's
the great,
Speech.
The King's
Yes.
Speech. You know,
That was actually my number one or number
that'll
two.
you've seen most already most of the films that'll
Yeah,
probably
I mean, the
be
only other one is Beautiful, which,
around.
but I don't think that's gonna get.
Yeah, no, yeah.
The only
But
other, the
Rabbit
other.
Hole. Have you seen
That's
Rabbit Hole?
Rabbit
Oh,
Hole.
you saw Rabbit Hole.
Nicole Kidman
That's
is
right.
great.
Yeah.
She's so good.
So, I mean, do you think you've seen most of them? Do you think that James Franco will be there in the top five at the end
Oh,
of the year?
absolutely.
Yeah, do you think he'll win?
Colin Firth is excellent. That's all I have to say. I don't
No,
know.
you think.
I
Oh,
think it'll be
interesting.
between those two. Unless, of course, is True Grit, is there any leading? I think all the men are supporting.
Well, Bridges is.
Is he
I
leading?
mean, he's the John Wayne character,
Right.
so.
All right. Well, but no, I mean, James Franco, this is, I was trying to think, I think this is his best performance. I mean,
Well, yeah.
yeah. And
I did love him in Annapolis. I
and
did
Flyboys.
absolutely love. Oh man, you know it's funny because this movie's strong, but when you think back to Flyboys in Annapolis, it's really hard to, really
I
hard to
was
make the
reading
same
there's
jump.
a New York article on him, and it is just he's taking four graduate, you know, all the stuff he's doing now. He's
Yeah,
taking
I've read
four
like
graduate
that
classes.
guy. I mean, not only is he doing all that stuff, but he has time to get interviewed by all these people
Yeah,
and do
I always
photo
wondered that. Yeah,
shoots. It doesn't make any sense. There's something going
this, yeah,
on.
that's what
My
I yeah,
man's faking it.
yeah,
He's come clean,
yeah.
James. Come
Seriously, no.
clean.
I mean, what do you think? You think he is
I
deserved?
think that the performance was definitely something. Like very impressive performance. You know, Tom Hanks Castaway type level stuff. But you know, Tom Hanks didn't win for that. So I don't know who won, but Hanks didn't take it home. So I don't know. I haven't seen King's Speech, but I think he probably definitely deserves to be in the top five at the end of the year, so far, based on what I've seen so far. So,
All right, cool. Yeah, well,
who also deserves to be in the top five is Denzel Washington
all
for his
right.
performance
What a great
in
segue.
Tony
All
Scott's
right, well,
Unstoppable,
let's get stopped.
which, well, that's not true. He doesn't deserve.
No.
He certainly doesn't deserve a nomination, but another solid turn from Mr. Washington as a regular guy. As just, you
Regular
know,
old
regular
Frank.
Joe. Red Frank Barnes, just
Frank
regular old
Barnes.
Frank, 50, whatever, you know, got 28 years in, just wants to retire, you know, he's just doing his thing. Just like, you know, Walter Garber, he's got 20-something years in at the subway, MTA, just looking to get
Very
out,
different characters.
trying to put his kids through college, his two daughters, trying to
Yes.
put them through college, you know, just like in other movies with him where he plays the
Other
exact
four
same
movies.
character.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, what'd you think? Unstoppable. Let's go.
Well, okay, we're coming. You would say you're a Tony Scott
Me.
apologist.
I guess I am a Tony Scott apologist, I
I'm
guess.
kind of a Tony Scott hater. I can't even think of one movie that I like, even True
Well,
Romance.
let's just take a minute
Let's
though.
go. Let's
Let's
go.
just take a minute and okay, Tony Scott. A Tony Scott apologist is a new development, I think, in my mind, over the last 9 or so years, right? Because let's think of this guy, okay, in 86. Now, I know you don't like Top Gun because you're stupid, but or you saw it when you're way too old.
Oh
But
yeah, I saw
yeah, I mean
less than 2 years ago
you
for the
saw it the
first
first
time.
time way too old. But okay, Top Gun in 86, the quintessential 80s movie. Yes, is it everything that's wrong in 80s movies? Oh yeah, sure. But is it everything that's right in 80s movies? Yes. Yes, it is. So you have Top Gun, solid movie, blockbuster, Tom Cruise, Kilmer, Edwards, Anthony Edwards, other people, Tim Robbins cameo, solid score by Kenny Loggins, great movie. And in all seriousness, the fighting scenes were revolutionary. You know, the camera stuff they were doing and the editing that they employed had not been done before until Top Gun. And then, you know, he had True Romance, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. You know, literally, Quentin Tarantino's script, Tony Scott directing, and Crimson Tide, 95. I mean,
The first
great
Zell.
movie, underrated. First Zell collaboration with the Hacks as well. Great, well written, amazingly edited. Ugh, great movie. And then after that, well,
Spy. Well, we had Enemy of the State, which I actually kind
Enemy
of
of the
enjoy,
State,
but I don't remember
Enemy of the
much of
State,
it.
right? That was all right.
Yeah, and
And then
Spy
Spy
Game, which
Game,
was
I
not bad.
consider, you know, I consider that to be his last, you know, very good movie. I mean, I really enjoy that movie. Robert Redford, Brad Pitt, solid film. And then The Apologists came out of the woodwork, because what followed there is just kind of a smorgasbord of just not great.
No.
Man on Fire, Domino,
Deja vu.
Deja Vu, oof, Deja Vu, Taking a Pill, 1, 2, 3. What
Then
else?
we got Unstoppable.
And
That's
that's
it.
always that always done?
Yep.
Oh, look at
And I mean, he directed that one episode of Numbers, which was
That
great.
was a great episode of Numbers.
Well, now I mean, now we got Chris Pine coming off Star Trek, and we
Yeah,
got the Zell,
we got the pine.
and we got, I mean,
Pine for pine.
a plot that initially looked stupid.
Written by, yeah, sure, certainly. Written by Mark Bomback,
Right.
the scribe who gave us such films as Hit Me With It, Jay.
Well, he wrote the upcoming one with
He
Pine, the
wrote Race to Witch
oh,
Mountain,
that's right.
Deception,
And, yeah, and he's got Jack Chan
Live
for the
Free or Die Hard, and Godsend.
Yes.
So, I mean, a National Book Award caliber writer here.
Right.
No, I'm kidding, Mark Bomback. You are good. But Unstoppable is better than it would seem, is what we're getting at.
That
I
is
think
true.
that's the point. Unstoppable is solid.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it opens up with like you need to know, but Ethan Suplee and T.J. Miller, they kind of f up at their jobs and
They fail to
stop
stop
a
a
train,
train.
and then you have 90 minutes of that of people failing to stop a train as it keeps going and Rosario Dawson screaming.
But see, you okay, so you clearly are being resentful. You are
No,
reverting back to your Tony Scott hater.
I had fun with it. I'm not saying I didn't. No, but that's what it
Well,
was.
all right,
I'm
well
just saying what it
let all
was.
right, all right, yeah. Here, okay. I enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed the
Yeah.
movie a lot. I'll say that. And so, saying that, I'll start with my biggest problem with it. And my biggest problem with it, for sure, was the parallel news coverage that goes on throughout the film, which, with honest to God, without that news coverage, the film would be 70 minutes long. Like, that's tw they, there's 20, gotta
Well, that
be.
was my problem with it. Every event that happens, you see it happen 3 times or more.
Right, so that was my big problem, because like there's a scene where Chris Pine has to do something. He has to like attach a train to a thing, to a train, a train to a train,
Whoa,
and he has to attach a train to a train, and he's doing it, and you see him do it close up, and then it cuts to where Denzel's daughters work at Hooters, and they're watching it at the bar, and they're yeah, Denzel Washington's daughters work at Hooters, by the way,
Let's not even
and
talk about that. Just keep
and.
going.
It's a funny joke in the movie, but he tries to do something, he fails, and then it cuts out to the new Fox News, of course Fox News, and film was produced by Fox, and oh, you know, Will Coulson has just failed to do this thing. It's like, wow, those people are really smart that they knew exactly what he wanted to do, even though they
Exactly.
didn't. And then it's like, and then he like slams his foot on the brake when it's connecting and all this stuff, and it's like, oh, Will Coulson is
And
injured.
then
It's
you
like,
see
and
the
then he might fall off. We can't see Will Coulson. Maybe he's dead. And
but
you're just like,
then
yeah.
that gets compounded by reactions from Rosario Dawson in the crew room or whatever. The guys in the crew room, his fan Chris Pine's family, and Denzel Washington's
Well, see
family.
the reactions, though. Okay, here's what I'll say about the reactions. Yes, there were probably too many of them, but thank God it was a Tony Scott film and not a fucking Clint Eastwood film, because in that shitty excuse for a movie, Invictus, which Unstoppable is 47 times better
Yes.
than that piece of
48,
shit
48 times.
Invictus, when that fucking horribly edited and shot rugby game is going on,
Oh my
it cuts back to
God.
every person in the stands'
That's true.
reactions. None of which you care about, Morgan Freeman's Nelson Mandela included, and they're like, oh, and it is literally like watching. It's like watching your life through a screen. Like you're watching your life get wasted. I was in the theater thinking to myself,
I am going to die someday, and there will have been 2 hours of my life that I could have been spending doing anything else. So my point is, thank God that this is a 95-minute film about a runaway train and that all the reactions are cut with literally 2 to 3 seconds or less, because that's what Scott does, because, you know, he cuts it up. He cuts it up.
He cuts it up. That is
Scott
true.
Scott cuts the shit up.
Yes, yes.
And but okay, but in terms of stuff I liked, repertoire between Pine and Washington.
Now, what do you think?
Solid as a rock.
They actually only come into play kind of halfway through the movie.
Right, there's like 45 minutes before them.
Right. I mean, well,
I mean, you get introduced to them, but I mean, they don't.
Did you like that setup? It just kind of stand like the whole daughter thing.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I liked they do a decent amount to deepen the characters enough. Like, I do think so. Like, Will Coulson, Chris Pine has this nice story. I mean, well, not nice story, but he's got, like, this pretty kind of interesting story about how he got this restraining order from his wife and stuff, and it's kind of strange, but it's kind of seems like a real story in the way he tells it. I don't know, you believe it?
Well, yeah, I mean, Chris Pine.
And, I mean, you know, he owns it. He owns that scene. And then, I'll say this. I wish that Denzel, like, for example, one thing I did like about Taking a Pelham 123, the remake, was that he was like this corrupt guy, but like he was a good guy that was corrupt because of the thing, you know. You know, if you've seen the movie, John Travolta gets him to confess that he did take money, he took a bribe, and it's a good scene up until he kind of starts harping about how he had to pay for his kids to go to college, then it kind of gets to be a little cheesy. But the point is, I like that, you know, good man, bad man thing going on, like, you know. You know, gray is the color that we're going to be playing with. Here, it's like, it's his wife died of cancer. It's like, oh, okay.
It's just good menzo.
Right. It's just like, good old Zell. You know, like Deja Vu, like the depth of Zell's character in Deja Vu was that his name was Doug. Like, literally, you're just like, well, I guess this guy's a superhero. Like, there's nothing about him. So this is a step above that, but a step below Pelham. But as a film, John Travolta is not in this one. So, Ensemble's better.
The villain is great in this. Like I said, it's like Jaws on a track. It's just,
yeah, the villain is, you know, I wouldn't say great. I would say, I would say,
well, my thing was like,
I mean, because, you know, well, yeah.
Well, my thing was, there's no, it's not really, there's never a slow point in the story, really. Because
I mean, Man vs. Machine is always interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what, I mean.
So, but it's not even like, like, I mean, we saw Predators. This, I mean, I wouldn't say they're machine, but like, there was so many dead moments in that movie because, like, even though Predators are supposed to be this ongoing force that never stopped, kind of, you know what I mean?
Well, Predators, yeah, I mean, Predators just was a smorgasbord.
Yeah, but there's no room for Tony Scott to not show the train. You know what I mean? Like, which is good. It's a good thing. And I mean, he does the way he captures it. A lot of aerial shots, like, they were nice to look at, but like, there was a lot.
See,
of
I think you're imagining more than there were.
No,
I really, really,
we'll see it again. We'll
we will. First of all, we won't see it again. All right, I don't have another $13 to be spending on Unstoppable.
Just a lot of the same thing is what I. But, that was my problem with it.
I mean, I guess I told you my in terms of repetitive shots. You know, that don't, you know, news coverage disincluded, repetitive shots. The thing I noticed the most, and enjoyed, but it kind of did irritate me, was there are probably 7 to 8 shots of Chris Pine, from pretty much the exact same angle, smiling and laughing to something that Zell says in the exact same way. So it's kind of weird. Like, it's like, you keep seeing, you're like, oh, is this how far is the movie going on? Like, he's doing it again. Because he never says anything back. He just laughs. So, like, Zell just be like, oh, I better get that done. And then like, and it's just like, so. I mean, I guess maybe I do that. Maybe we all do that when we laugh or whatever.
Tony Scott just capturing life. Like, that's what he's doing.
Tony Scott capturing the just Americana of the. But, no. I mean, I like, they set it up. You know, Chris Pine's hometown Stan, and that's where the plane, that's where the train's gonna crash. So it's like he's got something to lose. And
they had to point out. I mean, I guess they had to do this, but in every title card, there's what part of Pennsylvania it is, aside from the town.
Like, yeah, that kind of
Northern
seemed,
Pennsylvania.
That kind of seemed. I guess they had to do that.
So they know where the train is. But they also had that map that they showed us exactly where everything was happening. Oh, what the other thing was, they showed us the map. This is nitpicks that if you just like to have fun with your movies, then you won't see this. But like, there's a shot, they go to Rosario Dawson looking at this thing, and the train is a little blip. And it like goes blip, blip when it's going. And the 2 seconds you see a blip,
it goes
really far, and then it would have already, you know what I mean? Like,
there's, I know, there's no but way that's in every movie, dude. I know. I thought that too. Like, it's like you're 3 miles away from 10, and then it cuts back to the thing, and the green's like overtaking the red. You're like, oh, I guess they all died. Like, but no, I mean that happens in Spielberg movies. You know, I don't know, dude.
But then there was
like the Wilhelm scream. It has to be in there.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if we want to get more nitpicks, there was one. Do you notice this?
You want to get into more nitpicks.
I love nitpicking.
Go ahead.
I love nitpick Scott.
You're a Scott nitpicker.
I am.
I'm a Scott apologist.
The shot, I was trying to see when this was first done for my review, but I couldn't find it. But the shot where the camera's underneath the train. And it goes.
Yeah, well, he does
it like
4 times. Yeah.
But I was looking to see if it was a different shot, and it's the same shot, just repeated. Like the
no way.
Yeah, like no I was way. Looking at like what's you can see on the outside of the frame. It's just the same tree line, like the same.
No freaking way.
Yeah,
it's the same shot every time.
No, I noticed it twice. Same shot. So I don't know if he does it more than that. But yeah, it was really odd.
That is interesting.
I feel like that's the other thing about this movie. It's like almost just like we talked before, it cuts to reaction, it cuts to this. Every time they end a sentence, it's a smash cut of the train going by. You know what I mean? Like
I think that's one of the reasons it works though, because it's constantly because think about it, like a runaway train movie sounds like it's just obviously very exciting. But really, and our friend and fellow writer Nick Newman is one of the reasons he didn't like the movie. I mean, in reality, really, it's not that exciting because it's a runaway train. But I mean, for most of the time, it's a runaway train. There's a train track. They clear the train tracks, so it's really just kind of running. It's not like it barrels through towns, but no one's on the train track because it's a train track. So I mean, like, you know what I mean? So in reality, it's really not that exciting. And so, you know, Nick was saying that's why he didn't like it, because he felt like 80% of the time
fabricating
kind of. You know, there really wasn't any danger. But I think one of the ways that Tony Scott gets around that is that, you know, Chris Pine's like bah, bah, bah. When you're like, whoa, the train's the moon, you know, it's like, and you know, and I think the play-by-play and the news, all even though they be redundant, keep reminding the viewer, like, this train is going to kill 250,000 people if, like, Pine and Washington don't do something, you know? And so I think that...
Oh, do you like that? The way works. They, in the newscast, they say what the population is? I've never heard a newscast.
Really?
I've never, like, not... I mean, I guess I never watch news coverage of
you don't
Runaway
really watch
Twain.
Jordan doesn't really
I don't really
news.
Watch news. but, like, I don't know. It's like, this is the first thing they said. It was, like, Stan... Population 20,000.
Well, I just the only thing I felt
it's like okay,
was,
so now we know
was,
what the stakes
little,
are right away.
Yeah, it was a little like Prince of Persia, where it's like a video game where it's like, oh, this town, there's only 4,000 people in this town, so if Crash is here, whatever, 4 grand, no big. But if it crashes into the upper class Stan area, shit is gonna get real. 250,000 people, right, viewers? And I love where Jake Gyllenhaal spoofs and he does his parkour and he stops the train at the end of the movie.
I wish.
My favorite.
What do you think about the different things that they added to the script that didn't actually happen? Like the children and the Marine.
Based on a real event.
The Marine that just came back from war. Or was it a Marine? The guy that swoops in? Spoiler.
Yeah. The Marine guy. Yeah, the first time they try to stop. Yeah. I mean, they add like 2 deaths.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they add.
I did love.
What pissed me off. I just want to say this, and you know, whatever. I guess spoilers if you don't want to know the end of Unstoppable. spoilers. Anyway, okay. So they stop the train.
Yes.
Eventually, it turns out to be stoppable, which I guess you could accuse the movie of lying, really. But So two people die trying to stop the train in the beginning of the movie, and TJ Miller and Ethan Suplee are literally 110% responsible. Like literally, there's no mincing facts or anything. Like, they're responsible for the deaths of these two people, like, because the train, in fact, was unstopped because of them. And so at the end of the movie, after these two deaths and the destruction of just thousands upon millions upon
almost a horse.
Billions of property and all this stuff. When the train stops, it cuts to TJ Miller and Ethan Suppe being like,
in the crew, yeah! In the break
like,
room.
We fucking, yeah, they're like hugging. And you're like, dude, like, yeah, those you're happy? Assholes. Are you happy that the train stopped? Because, like, you only killed two people? Like, I don't know. I just think they do their thing and then they're pretty much out of the movie. Like, you show one shot of them with their heads, like, sullen and, like, they're sad, and then you don't see them again because,
getting arrested.
Like, what's their redemption? Like, their redemption is that they killed two people. Their redemption is that they're fucking idiots who should go to jail forever.
They
like,
didn't, they didn't kill them.
You know what I mean? So, true. That's true. So that was a little bit of a peeve in terms of narrative callbacks or whatever. But
One narrative callback I did like, though, was Ned. Played by Lou Temple. The guy in the pickup truck.
There had to be that callback because there was so much in the beginning about this dude. And I was like, what is he going to do? That's the thing about this movie, too. And then I'll say this. A thing that was kind of impressive about it in terms of the writing and I guess the directing was, like, you know, kind of like Speed. You know, this movie's a lot like Speed. And I was talking to another fellow writer, Connor, and I was saying, the thing that separates this movie in terms of pure entertainment from a classic like Speed is it doesn't have that great Speed score that, like, actually, the score for Unstoppable is kind of shit. I don't know who did it, but it's just very standard. But
yes.
But the score separates it. And actually, I said this, and this, the villain separates it. Because Dennis Hopper's so memorable in Speed.
Yes.
And
rest in peace.
Rest in peace. And the train, you know, yeah, I guess it has its Jaws-like quality of just being like this unstoppable thing. No pun intended.
Was that a pun? Because that's what it is.
you know, it is just a train, so there's really no way to really characterize it or anything. I did love the part in the movie when the train transformed into Optimus Prime.
Yes, at the end.
That was good. A great scene. yeah, I mean, those are the two things that I think primarily stop it. But what I was going to say before is about what they're able to do. Is there's all these different characters, and you're watching the movie, and I kept thinking, like, what are these people going to actually do to, like, earn their merit in stopping this train? You know, like that's what I was like, what's this dude in the pickup? Like, there's shots of him following the train for literally, like, miles. You're like, what is this guy doing? Like, what is he going to do? Is he going to, like, park his pickup in front of the train? Like, prepare to be stoppable, you know? Like, what? And so, like, and he comes in at the end and does something, and, like, that. And so, and Rosario Dawson ends up being, like, actually kind of helpful and stuff. So, that was impressive.
It's more satisfying that they were able to incorporate that stuff. Let's say the James Gandolfini character and taking a Pelham 1-2-3. That's a supporting character. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, the pretty much the exact same characters in this one. And Kevin Dunn plays the corporate guy, pretty much does it. Like, literally, almost the exact same thing where. When they take the car and take an Pelham instead of the helicopter, and then James Gandolfini after is like, why don't we just take a helicopter? In this movie, they try to shoot the brake.
Well, no, they put those orange. That was his plan, to put those orange things to slow it down, like over the tracks. Remember that, and then just smash through them.
Oh, the alternate.
Yeah.
The derailleur.
Yeah,
that's what it's called, the derailleur. And then it busts through. Yeah, okay, well, even in that one, that's his plan, and then it busts right through, and he's like, oh, what?
Like, so easily, too. It wasn't
pretty
even...
Much the same. I like that, though.
Yeah, I know, me too.
Like, they're nice little touches like that all throughout. So I guess, really, end of the day, pure enjoyment.
Yes.
Not a bad movie. Definitely Tony Scott's best movie since
Spy Game,
for sure.
For show.
For show. And
I can't wait for the sequel, bro.
Unstoppable too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of places this train can go, like, character wise.
I do think that the Will Coulson character definitely has longevity, like Kirk.
Yes.
You know, definitely a long standing. You know.
Yeah.
Just fan base too. You know, people are going to be wearing Will Coulson shirts.
Yeah.
Soon. Right. So anyway.
All right. Well, let's go on to our third. Third film of the weekend.
Hit me with it.
Morning Glory.
Morning Glory.
Now it's kind of sad to see the box office receipts for this.
A little sad, a little less than. But nice to know it only costs $40 million.
That is nice. I didn't even know that.
That's nice.
That's good. Yeah, I mean,
it made 10, a little less than 10 and over, this weekend, and then it made, I mean, Cume, I think, was...
Like 12. What's it up to? 12? Like 12.5 or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 11.8 so far.
Wow. Are those the actuals that came in?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, not strong. Not strong. But directed by Roger Mitchell, who has given us a mixed bag of films, I would say.
Last night we were watching Notting Hill.
Notting Hill, which is I love it too. I rewatch it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not personal favorites, I was going to say, but I mean, really, just a movie. I just like rewatching it. Great movie.
And I've actually only ever seen Changing Lanes, which I love.
Yeah. I really, really enjoy Changing Lanes.
I haven't seen Venus either.
It's too solid. Venus is bad.
Yeah.
I really remember not liking Venus. You know, Peter O'Toole, he got that kind of overly aggrandized performance and, you know, reception. He got nominated. People talked about him winning. It was kind of ridiculous. Silly. But it's a fine movie. Not really. I mean, it's a December, what's the word? May-December romance kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the acting's great, but really, I mean, just vacant of any kind of... anything.
Yeah.
What about this? What do you think? What do you think about this?
What do I think about Morning Glory?
About Morning Glory.
Yes, I enjoyed it. It's exactly what I expected.
Exactly what the trailer's promised.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, from the writer of Devil Wears Prada and 27 Dresses.
And the upcoming We Bought a Zoo, which is the new Cameron Crowe movie.
That's right. I really think that Rachel McAdams did a great job here. Like,
she just owns every scene. I mean, she's so adorable, and I mean, I don't know, just really just sucks you right into her character. Yeah. You know, definitely gets away with a lot because of her just inherent charm.
Mm-hmm. And I really liked how this movie was a lot more on the comedy side than romance.
Totally, very funny.
More work related stuff that I could actually relate to, you know.
Jeff Goldblum puts in a nice little performance as the executive, and it kind of even snarkier than I could have ever expected. You know, he's usually more oddball than dark, but in this one, he's kind of the bad guy in some ways.
Yeah.
And Harrison Ford is trying.
Yes.
You know, which, you know, I'm not gonna say he wasn't trying in Extraordinary Measures. I mean, in my review of that movie, you know, which I gave it like a three out of ten or whatever, I said, I mean, he's really the only reason to go see it. I mean, because he does put in this kind of impassioned performance as this professor or this scientist and all this stuff.
Yeah, let's not talk about him.
But my point is, it's not Firewall.
No.
Okay? That's like the Harrison Ford you never want to see. Like, you never want to see the Harrison Ford who's just, like, clearly didn't read the script or whatever, and he just, like, went on and he's like, all right, let's do it. Like, my family's kidnapped? You know what I mean? Like, that Harrison Ford is the Harrison Ford. That's the saddest Harrison Ford. And this is not it. This is him having fun, doing comedy. Some people say he's not good at comedy. I really don't agree.
I think he's been, even in
a movie like Hollywood Homicide, which, you know, I'm a Harrison Ford apologist.
That's true.
I'm a Jay Hartnett apologist. Apparently, I'm just an apologist, but... But that movie, not great, Hollywood Homicide, by any means. But, like, you know, there's some really nice moments courtesy of Mr. Ford in that film.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see him with people of his caliber, like Rich McAdams and Patrick Wilson and Diane Keaton, even though I do think Diane Keaton at some points tries a little bit too hard in this one, for sure.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, no, I mean, it's just a really enjoyable... I don't know what else... I mean... It's enjoyable. I don't know.
It looks nice.
Yeah.
Very, very standard.
Very fast paced too. Which is nice.
Very fast paced. A little sitcom-y. I mean, a lot of sitcom-y. One to two too many pop song montages for sure.
Oh yeah, towards the end, it's a little.
You know, canted angle slow motion sequences, notwithstanding. There's some. You know, there's some nice moments. I mean, for sure, like Harrison Ford and Rachel McAdams have a nice little combo, as hinted in the trailer, where Harrison Ford kind of reflects a little bit. They get real.
They get real, yeah.
They get real for a second, and you know, certainly the writing isn't what's going to push you through that scene, but more the acting and like Variety said, and I agree with this for sure. I thought this was a really nice way to put it. In a perfect world, Rachel McAdams and Harrison Ford could have been closer than 35 years apart, and they would have just been the perfect on-screen couple. You know, they have a chemistry that you don't see a lot. They have a chemistry you don't see a lot. And it's almost a shame that, like, Patrick Wilson, though he be very charming in this film and very funny when he wants to be, it's almost a shame he has to be in it, because it would have been kind of cool, you know, also very unprofessional, but kind of cool if some insane Venus-like, if you will, romance developed between Mr. Ford, Mike Pomeroy, and Becky Fuller, Rachel McAdams, in the film. But instead, we get kind of more standard stuff, including a last minute
little joke, which
I think is adorable. I eat this shit up.
That's a perfect way to say this movie. I eat this shit up.
I understand people who don't, I guess. But this is what, the cynical thing. This is what we were talking about. Okay. You know, like, and see, this is like, I always go back to this, and maybe I'm wrong. I'm probably wrong, and please write us if I am wrong. But was there a Doris Day movie? Like, was Pillow Talk deeper and smarter than Morning Glory? Was it? Like, was it really? Because people, because I don't think so, and I've seen it. Like, I don't think so. Like people look back at her movies, Doris Day, beautiful, amazing voice. Like, you know, could do no wrong, angel. They look at those movies, these Doris Day, Rock Hudson movies, which are charming as all hell. And, like, they're considered these, like, kind of, you know, classics of, you know, I don't know, of America, and, you know, this and all this. And they're cutesy movies, but I mean, like, Morning Glory, you know, getting 50% Rotten Tomatoes and people calling it, you know, whatever they're calling it, just like, you know, downgrade in intelligence and all this stuff. It's like, I don't fully understand where it's coming from if people are recalling these other movies in this like completely different way, you know. For example, Down with Love. Did you ever see Down with Love? Down with Love literally was Pillow Talk, right? It was like a somewhat satirical kind of women empowerment remake of Pillow Talk, and it was Ewan McGregor, Renee Zellweger, Doris Day, Rock Hudson, kind of a thing. Ewan McGregor's name in the movie was Catcher Block. Like, you know, like ridiculous shit like that. And I love that movie. Like, I thought that movie was hysterical. It had a lot of nice things going for it. And it got shit on, just completely hated on by the public and by the critics. And it's one of these things with Morning Glory. I don't know. Maybe those movies just can't be made anymore. Maybe they just can't be made anymore. And maybe you just have to dish them out the way that Alice Bros McKenna did with a movie like, a movie like 27 Dresses, or, another writer did with The Ugly Truth and these other just like, you know, was it Life As We Know It? These movies that don't even try.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It confuses me, you know, it definitely confuses me what the public wants. You know, like, why does Life As You Know It, As We Know It, and Ugly Truth, why do those movies, why are they hits, and then why is something like Morning Glory kind of relegated to the back burner? I don't fully understand. Like, why did Devil Wears Prada do well and this didn't do well? I don't really know. You know, it's a strange thing. Maybe because the fashion and then Morning News is, like, a lot less exciting. That could be a big thing. But, I mean, I enjoyed Morning Glory far more than I enjoyed Devil Wears Prada.
Yes, me too.
For sure. So, I mean, it's strange. It's a
strange world.
It's a strange subgenre, whatever, romantic comedies, especially nowadays.
Can we talk about something even stranger than everything?
Yes, please
talk combined. All right, so Morning Glory, check it out, I would say. Nice. With your significant other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or your whatever. Bro. Good or your bro, movie. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, we bro out. Whatever, it doesn't matter.
All right.
But please, someone, you know, respond to me about the cynical thing. I want to know. Yeah. We're always curious about that question.
All right.
All right, this is all you, Jay. I don't.
Well, you saw the time.
I saw the first 10. This was
the other movie that came out this weekend, Skyline.
Just take back the sky.
Don't look up. Now this is from the Brothers Strauss,
the,
which we will now refer to them as they are for doing the credits, but we will Now call them Colin Strauss God. And Greg Strauss. Actually, I'm Colin Greg because I feel like
C and G.
C and G.
Collie and Greg.
So yeah, this is the sci-fi movie that probably got greenlit because of the success of District 9, Avatar.
Well, because it cost no money.
Yeah, and it stars two unexpected leads, Eric Balfour and Donald Faison.
Unexpected is a good word.
Yes, because they don't really fit here, because they shouldn't be leads.
All right.
But no, okay, before this movie came out, I mean, Universal, like, what's another movie we talked about? They deserving a medal for marketing. What was the other? There was a film this year we talked about that the marketing was, Last Airbender, Paramount. They marketed that movie. I was excited to see Last Airbender. This is actually extremely similar because this is the second worst film of the year.
It really is.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, yeah. Wow, that's
amazing. Because, okay, movies like Cop Out, Extraordinary Measures, it's incompetent, but the filmmaking has at least some sort of standard. You know what I mean? Like you're watching it and you're not distracted about how terrible the filmmaking is that's going on.
Like, in Cop Out, you weren't distracted by how bad the filmmaking was?
Well, like, the action scenes were horrendous, but, like, it was standardly lit to a point where I wasn't like, you know what I'm saying? Like, someone put it together.
Okay. That's a good point. When the lighting is noticeably bad in a Hollywood film,
yeah,
especially in this day of post-saviorness.
Yeah, like someone had at least 10% of knowledge of going.
Like, someone was thinking Cop Out is going
to
be.
Someone lit Cop Out, is what I'm trying to say. Someone used lights for Cop Out. That's all I'm trying
Jordan,
to say.
Are you saying they didn't use lights for Skyline?
There are some questionable scenes. Well, I mean, okay, anyways.
No. I know. I saw enough of it to see what you're saying.
It's funny that the movie can look so much like a sci-fi film, just in the dramatic scenes, and then look so much like, I mean, we saw monsters. I mean, the special effects are comparable to that. Like, they're solid. Mm-hmm. There's a few that are excellent. I would go as far as that. Like, but I mean, the backbone of this movie is you're spending, you know, the whole movie in this apartment, which is the Strauss Brothers apartment, and they love to show off all the cool shit in their apartment because there's 10 shots of they have, you know, full glass windows that they have a button, they have a keypad that they can control everything with. And yeah, anyways, there's just like a million little things like that where there's wide shots of their apartment. Oh, there's one.
Is their actual apartment?
Well, yeah, they filmed it all in their apartment. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I mean, I know they filmed it in an apartment. I think it was theirs. That's what they said. I mean, even another level. I mean, we're getting almost Connecticut-y, New York, meta here, but like, the actors in this, their characters are special effects artists.
Whoa.
Yeah, so it's that deep.
That is so meta.
And, yeah, no, so, I mean, the premise is, for some unknown reason, these ships come, shoot this blue light down, people look into it, get sucked up. The end. That's the premise. Right. And then, but then there's also, like, little offshoots of these things. Like,
I have a question. When does Will Smith propose to Vivica A. Fox?
About 58 minutes.
Okay.
No, this is, I mean, it has that element of Independence Day. It has the, they try to do something like the basement scene in War of the Worlds. Mm-hmm. Then they have the Cloverfield stuff with the apartment, except these are guys who are even bigger douchebags. So, like, I don't know what they thought. I mean, I love Cloverfield, but, like, I like the characters just because they're fun. But, like, this is just, anyways. Yeah, and so, you know, I was excited to see this because it's kind of like I'm a sucker for these kind of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts off with a little tease, as Dan saw, with the blue light. They're waking up, and then it flashes 15 hours earlier. And you kind of see how these events unfolded. And just about every... Okay, with Last Airbender I kind of knew going in it was going to be bad, so mm-hmm. I was kind of excited just to laugh at it. And, you know, Last Airbender, I thought it was hilarious just how terrible it was just put together.
That movie was just so bad, right?
Yeah.
That was just, like, the worst thing...
And with this, like, it's made. Not, a lot of people said this was funny. It's not funny. It's just boring. Because at least, with Airbender, like, the child acting was terrible. And this is, and it was kind of funny, like, because how bad it was and how.
I think another thing with Airbender is, like, it's got that fantasy element.
Well, I was just going to say that. They're talking about things that are inherently funny because they're so ridiculous.
Like, and if you can't, like, buy into the world, then like that whole world becomes funny.
But this, it's just,
but this is normal. Like, this is a normal world.
To, yeah,
right. Yeah,
trying to talk about things you don't give a shit about. Like one girl's pregnant. Oh, and by the
way, dude, that like okay, that see, that's like cop out. Because like cop out is like, you know, like, you know, the reason that cop out is just sort of so boring. Sounds like for the same reason is because it's just like. They're cops, you know, so they talk about these things and, like, the whole baseball card thing. And that you're just like, I don't care about, like, any of this. Because, like, not only can I not, like, I could relate to this in, you know, I could relate to this because I'm a human being. But I'm choosing not to because I don't, like, have any investment in it at all. Right?
And so exactly like this. And, like, oh, my God, if you're a woman, like. This movie, the women are only there to scream and run away. Like, that's all they're there for. That is it. That's the end.
Well, the brothers Strauss are they're making a comment on Hollywood.
Okay.
On Hollywood, you know, the way that Hollywood portrays women.
And about every 30 minutes or so, there's the, like, out of, you know, that would be two times in this 90-minute movie. No, three times. Where you're like, oh, okay. Like, I see, like, what they almost tried to do there. Like, okay. And Yeah. And you're like, okay. And then, like, oh, God. And the end, I'm not going to go into spoilers, but someone tweeted this. Someone said, I don't want to see Skyline, but... After hearing what the ending is, I would love to see Skyline 2. And that's exactly how I feel about this. The ending is so insane and, like comes out of nowhere. And not even, like, a surprise twist kind of way. Just, like I turned to Nick. I was like, are we in, like, a fever dream? Like, am I dreaming, like, right now? It's, like, it's so, like, out of left field and, like, doesn't fit with anything really in the movie that you're just, like, you that's the moment of the most interest is in the last second of the movie. And then it ends. And so it's, like, anyways. And, yeah, but, I mean, we could get into spoilers and talk about how ridiculous stuff is, but, I mean, it involves Eric Balfour punching an alien that looks completely fake, with fake blood, fake, not even blood, fake, like, mush coming out. That's about as funny as it gets. Other than that, it's just a lot of, you know, interactions in their apartments. There's one horrendous action scene where they're running away from something, and out of nowhere, it cuts to slow motion, and not even for a reason. They're just running around a corner, and like you see something in the distance. But you know, it's in some movies at least. There's like an audio effect where it's like, or like they cut to slow motion. This literally, they're running, and it goes into slow motion, and then it cuts out. It's like what? And there's just so many like poor choices. It's just like all around every little element. The cop from Dexter. I don't even know. I don't know his name. Anyway,
Ramirez,
yeah, from Dexter. He's in here. Not gonna get into huge spoilers, but there's a scene that's supposed to be this epic finale to his character, and it's just horrendously handled from top to bottom. The only real moments of interest are when. Oh, even the special effects, like, they could be good, but there's a scene, like, where these fighter planes come out of absolutely nowhere. It's not even like they're looking outside. It just cuts to them. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing with Cloverfield, at least that's why I loved it. All cut from this one point of view. With this, they just go, and they just cut to, like, places that you, and yeah, and so, like, even when the special effects are somewhat impressive, you don't care about them because it has, you know, it's not billing towards anything. So yeah, just completely avoid.
completely avoid.
If you want to laugh, don't. I mean, The Last Airbender is out today on Blu-ray. starting today, so just rent that. There's a million other choices. I watch Cloverfield again. Oh, actually, watch Monsters. Definitely.
Yeah, because those are good characters. Watch Monsters. Yeah, that's a great. Not great, but it's a solid.
Yeah.
Solid, I mean, film.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, absolutely avoid. If you were intrigued by the teaser, the teaser is no longer than any scene in the movie, that part of the teaser. Like there's horrendous. I can't wait for the sequel. Literally I can't wait because I really wonder what they're gonna do with the end. Email me in your ideas because I don't know where they could go. It would have to be a spoiler, all completely CG movie. So it'll be interesting to see. All right, well, that wraps up our podcast.
Our review filled podcast.
Yes, and next week we got. I really don't see myself seeing Harry Potter. I don't know.
I am seeing next 3 days.
And we are. We're both seeing next 3 days.
Are you gonna be there too?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Good, we're both seeing next three days, and we'll definitely review that.
Lionsgate is distributing the next 3 days.
Yeah, which is kind of weird.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and I really want to see Fair Game, so maybe we can.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea. Maybe we can do a little
before.
Do a little another day for sure. We gotta see Fair Game.
Yes. So yeah. So thank you for keeping up with us if you are listening, and we apologize for the
spottiness. Yeah. Keep it more regular.
Absolutely. Yeah. As I said, I'm closer to Dan now, so we can have this intimate podcast.
Very very closer. Much closer.
And yeah, I mean, if you have any ideas for things you'd like to discuss, I mean, we're gonna talk about maybe changing the format up. I kind of like. Just talking about whatever on our mind rather than keeping a rigid schedule.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So if you have any, like, a topic you'd like to discuss or film to watch, just definitely email us at editors, I guess, at thefilmstage.com.
Yeah, yeah.
We can all talk about it. I finally have a new computer, so we could bring in some people from Skype, maybe, have a little guest star action.
That'd
so,
awesome.
So, yeah, so we will see you next week.